Prime ministers
and presidents
may come and go, but the certainty of exemplary entertainment on the Midweek Drive
and the Midweek Drive Morning Edition
remains.
Zam, the zombie apocalypse medicine meeting. That's just one of the acronyms that we're going to be covering over the next 30 or so minutes, as we have five superb souls actually with us at present. Well, five of them, myself, there might be a fourth one joining us. First of all the way from California, for what's almost becoming a sort of weekly setup in many ways. It's ace director and filmmaker Ilana Rain. How are you, Ilana?
Doing great, Alex. Thank you. How about you?
Well, I'm always impressed when you do the call in California, and it's what, about 11 a.m. California
right.
time, so it's just coming up to for lunch and so on. Well, to let you know that actually Thursday is going to be a good day, we've got our BAFTA award-winning director, Graham Harper. How are you, Graham?
I'm fine, thank you very much. Really, really good.
Exactly. It's a certain sense of constancy, Graham, that you always have the Hamlet poster in the background there. It's very good. It's sort of,
yeah.
The quality is actually there from that point of view. And from North Carolina, because we thought it was important that we keep a sort of balance in terms of Brits and Americans here. So we've got Jessica Burtis. How are you, Jessica?
Good. How are you?
Splendid. Excellent stuff. And then clearly providing the wonderful music for the whole sort of sequence, it's our ace songstress from Cleethorpes in England. That's Chloe Rose. How are you, Chloe?
Hello. I'm very good, thank you. Not too bad. And it's lovely to see you all.
There we are.
Are you going to gently sing in the background?
Do you know, that's a thought, Graham, but maybe not. Maybe Zoom couldn't quite cope with a kind of musical at this stage, although who knows where we're going. Jessica, you've had a chance to have a look at some of Ilana's sort of background from that point of view. Have you got any questions you want to sort of throw in at this particular stage? We'll start off with yourself. You know, as you know, let's let the Americans go first, Graham.
All right, if we have to.
when I was reading your biography, I actually went to an interview that Ilana had with I think it was Popcorn.
Okay, sure. Yeah, oh, that was a good one.
Yeah, you talked about how you grew up with kind of your father working in the movie industry, and that you would go to his sets during lunch during school.
Well, yeah. So he directed documentaries and really then segued into more commercial angle, commercials and corporate videos, because I guess he took the responsibility of having a child rather seriously. but yet he was still on set and he worked for production companies. So yes, I did. It was very much a part of my upbringing on school breaks, starting a very young age. He also cast me as much as possible. And I played a kid with asthma one day in some, you know, commercial. And so, you know, I got very familiar with the set and how it ran, and the necessary hierarchy. And I saw how good sets were run and how chaotic sets were run, you know, when he wasn't the director. So just by absorption, I think it was really interesting. And I think it's a real special place, as Graham, I'm sure, will tell you, you know, when you're on set working with a closed group, small group of people or a large group of people, you become this instant family, whether you're related or not. And you know, also whilst there is a hierarchy that needs to be respected, I believe that every single person on set is equal and valuable, and if they're pulling their weight, then they all deserve to be there and be treated respectfully. So that sort of you know, brought that, came up with me just naturally. How
yeah,
like
I agree with that.
I was going to say, Graham, do you create that sort of familial atmosphere? Because I know from many people who've worked with you, it's the sense of enthusiasm that you actually bring to your work that is always very, very tangible.
Do you know, everything I've ever worked on, whether it's quite poor quality sometimes, occasionally in my life, to the great stuff the stuff that you really enjoy, you think is really well written and is really worth putting on screen. but it is the pure joy. There's something I wanted to ask Ilana or commiserate with in a second, but Now I'm an old guy. I've had a lot of experience. I've had some really bad times with people I didn't gel with. And I tried, and it takes two to tango, so something was wrong with me as well. And when it's bad, you get through it, and hopefully it's still good. But, oh, boy, it's an awful experience for those 3 or 4 months you're together. But when it's good, and often it's really good, it's absolute joy, enthusiasm from everybody, and a great love of work being there. And gosh, we're in a great business, aren't we? Lucky to be doing it. It's marvelous. Yeah.
Chloe,
could I ask the next question? No, go on, Chloe.
We'll come back to you, Graham. But Chloe, I know that you sort of said when I sent you this the wonderful sort of biography from Ilana, you had a good read. So having digested those things, what little question would you like to put into Ilana at this stage?
I'd love to know, what made you become a filmmaker? Sort of, how did it all start? I'd love to know, you know, how it all began.
Sure. Well, I've always been making photographs and small films, and I got my master's in photography and related media, and after graduation did editorial work, fine art work. It was in galleries, but there was a pivotal moment after September 11th. I was in Manhattan, indeed in the lockdown zone. We saw the buildings fall. We were in a high-rise building at the time. So there was this reckoning of my city and of America, but you know, the neighborhood. And there was so much that needed to be said that I found photography utterly inadequate, still photography. And great pictures were taken and will always be taken, and I still do photograph. But that led me to have to start making films. So I started making some documentaries about the event, on people's experience, normal New Yorkers, not the heroes, not the people stuck in the buildings, but how it affected us. And that film got some attention and traction from the Film Center, people at Lincoln Center, and it was shown in a festival. So I took that. I was like, okay, I'm actually on the right track with something. And then it just kept going from there. And eventually my short films, which were fictional, transitioning to that led to a need to make larger films. And that's what I just finished. Well, not just, but, you know, it all moves so glacially here. Perception, which is a feature film, and I don't know if you can get it in the UK, but it's now been distributed by Gravitas, and it's on Amazon Prime and iTunes, so you can check that out to see from that whole evolution.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's how, you know, that gave you the inspiration to want to, you know, make a difference through sort of filming that event and then putting it all together. It's amazing.
Yeah, no, and it's interesting because now that we're dealing with this other crisis, and here in America, we have 160,000 people lost, which is a multiple of our 9/11 casualties by, I mean, I don't even like talking about
these numbers.
We call
it the Trump factor, Ilana, the Trump factor.
Yeah, the Trump factor. But, you know, when I talk about these numbers, I don't really, it dehumanizes it. So I hate throwing numbers out like that. Yeah. Like, this is like 10 9/11s, or, you know, it dehumanizes it because each of these people had a family and, friends. And so regardless, interestingly, I'm writing my new screenplay and revising some other ones in development, but I'm now finding myself that still photography is what is helping me navigate this moment, because we're so deep in this crisis, this world, but especially America, that it's almost hard to see the contours of how we're going to get out. Yeah. And so I'm taking click. That's my mediating thing now. I can't have a film crew right now safely or anything. Not even going to bother.
Sorry, Graham.
I was just going to say, what's really shocking, you just made me realise, we have a huge amount, but not quite as many as you have, but you're a bigger country. So we've got 46,000, 47,000 people have died. And those figures are thrown out every day. And now it's down to, I don't know what the current thing is, but it's down to 38 people have died today or yesterday. 38 people is enormous. And we just kind of talk about it as if it's, yeah, that's it's all fine because it's coming right down now. And yet people's lives are being destroyed in families. And we just don't kind of take that on, really.
Jessica, can I come to you? Because obviously you're in the States, and Ilana, a very heartfelt line there with respect to obviously the enormity of the task, etc. I mean, have you felt that the media's has trivialised it? I mean, as somebody, I mean, you were too young to remember 9/11. Obviously, you know of it, but it was you know, obviously from that point of view. What are your own thoughts about this whole pandemic that we're going through?
I do agree that, and I think especially too with the difference between California and the East Coast, we have different numbers. And again, it is very sad to think about with the media kind of throwing out these numbers and gets to the point where people will say, oh, only 200 people died. That's so good. Absolutely. And it's like, oh my goodness. It's really sad and disheartening to see that we're at a point where we're kind of just treating it as a death toll rather than an actual loss of human life. And I do think that the media is trivializing it through making it kind of a shock point of view. They really seem to be searching for just views at the moment, in my opinion at least. So I do think they're kind of treating the pandemic as sensationalism rather than actual tragedy, which is horrible to relate.
Yeah, no, that's right. And the most humanity, though, can be found in some of the local papers where they run the obituaries.
Yes,
and that's where we have to search for it, search for the humanity.
Yeah.
Louis, from your own perspective, any thoughts in terms of what, as we've said, seems to have been a three-way challenge between Britain, the United States and Brazil in terms of who can get the biggest numbers up in this transcendent sort of period. But Chloe, any thoughts from yourself?
I just think it's such a tragedy, really. And it's quite hard to believe it's still happening. But I think because obviously the numbers are coming down in certain places, I think they're sort of trying to normalise it as if, you know, it's okay now and, you know, we've got to carry on and sort of thing. Like, it's, I don't know, I find that difficult, really. Like, you know, like everyone on here has been saying, it's human life at the end of the day. And, like, I have the same opinion. I feel like they're just treating it as, you know, so much, such and such people die today, but that's obviously really good because it's less. But at the end of the day, it's still really bad. It shouldn't really be happening. Obviously, it is happening because it's a pandemic, but, you know, I don't know. It's just not good.
Ilana was talking about how she's, in a sense, changed her whole artistic approach in terms of obviously coping with this. And again, there's this academic zombie conference, which I'm not sure whether bringing out the zombies is going to help anybody, but that's another line entirely. Just share with us how you've actually been coping and how, you, in a sense, you've also, your songwriting and your musical performance has maybe sort of been impacted or is being impacted by the global events.
Yeah. I mean, at the moment, it's really difficult. There was a few gigs that I did have lined up during when lockdown sort of struck. So then I was stuck in a lot and I thought, well, what can I do? What can I do to make a difference? And so I was working closely with a charity called Care for Carers UK, and this charity was helping NHS staff so they could get a free breakaway, you know, after the pandemic. And so I've just been putting videos up and just trying to make a difference that way. And it's difficult. It is so hard because you're used to interacting with everyone and, you know, being in the arts and, you know, filmmakers and that kind of thing. You're used to working closely with a lot of people and it's difficult. You know, when you're stuck at home, and I feel like a recluse sometimes, you know, it's I want to be happy and hug people, and you can't, you know, people are elbowing each other, sort of, you know, touching elbows rather than shaking hands. But what can you do? What can you do? Crazy.
Graham, I won't say what can we do, because I know it was one of your productions was the last thing I actually saw before we went into lockdown, which was, of course, the Hollyoaks soap opera series that you were actually directing. You've obviously been in lockdown since March 24th, etc. Same question. How have you effectively sort of, has it impacted in terms of the way you've been thinking about, you know, possible ways in which you get back to directing films and TV and so on?
I don't know how that's going to happen. I'm waiting for a call, which I suspect won't happen now till the new year. that I'm supposed to be going back to do some more Hollyoaks, which I've not retired, but I've really slowed right down. I don't really want to go out every day to do it. I just want to do things I really enjoy. And strange enough, you'll all laugh, but I actually enjoy Hollyoaks. It's a huge piece of fun, and not to be taken too seriously. And it's great entertainment.
For the benefit of Jessica and Ilana, I'll just say Hollyoaks is a British soap opera, but it's a glossy British soap opera set in Merseyside with a group of fairly attractive youngsters. I mean, Jessica, did you see Hollyoaks at all when you were over here at all? Possibly not.
I don't think I did.
You're too busy doing
I know Hollyoaks because
you would remember.
Brian Bovell was one of my stars in Ellipse, and he had a big run on Hollyoaks many years ago.
Yes, I remember him, yeah. Yes. I have never worked with him, gosh. Right. That's a small world. I haven't really envisaged how it's going to work, to be honest, because I don't know how you social distance on a movie set. I just don't know how you do that.
Well, so here they've started up some production again, and I see actually there was a crew in our neighborhood not like last week. The unions managed to get some pretty strict, regulations in with masks. I'm not so sure how well it's working. I guess we're going to wait and see, but I don't either, because it would be rather cost prohibitive to say quarantine a whole crew for 2 weeks. But perhaps they're viewing this as somewhat essential, and a 250,000 people in the industry here filed for unemployment benefits. So it's quite a chunk, and it's I don't know what's going to happen, but you're right. I don't see how it's possible. I mean, because I remember just my last project, I was sitting, 3 inches away from my DP for, 9 hours a day. So how is it possible? How are intimate scenes possible? But just what, Chloe, I think what's also interesting, what you said about how hard it is, and you want to do something, you want to make a difference.
Yeah.
I find that sometimes this pandemic is just, it's running in the background all the time. Like I can do something or start some that project or, working on these, on the conference. And I would normally just be like, yeah, let's go. And I'm in it. And it would kind of carry me for days and weeks and this sort of buzz. But now it's like, oh, but wait, there's this happening. And there's all this suffering, and it's like, okay, I want to make a difference. I want to contribute good things to culture and society and be positive, but it is a challenge because it's always running in the background, and especially with our lack of leadership and direction and perhaps plunge into, authoritarianism. It's even more so. Like, really, does the world need another film? Does the world need another photograph? And I have to say, I think, or a song, and I think the answer is yes. I think that I think our culture is what's going to save us and is what's going to bring us together.
There's no experience behind any of them, is there? They're so inexperienced, our leaders. We've got no, I imagine a bar.
They're experienced in bovine stuff, Graham. It's a different sort of level of experience that they've actually got.
Well, yeah, Barack Obama, I can imagine the care that he would give to this whole situation, not Trump. Mm-hmm. I mean, he seemed to have such gravitas and experience, even though he's a young guy. They've exchanged, or you have exchanged that for Trump, and we have exchanged what we had for Boris.
Exactly. But let's remember, 3 million more Americans did not want him. It's because of our electoral college system that a small portion of a very anti-science believing bit of the population managed to elevate this horror show. And yes, and the charisma of Boris Johnson. I mean, I don't know much about Tony Blair, but I imagine he would have handled it a lot better too.
I think so.
Graham and myself did actually do an interview with Tony Blair, and I feel it's fair enough that we did feel that he was more solid in the whole solar system, even though he was asked by a mutual friend, Sarah Huntley, had he had a reasonably interesting telephonic wink at the end of the day. But that's a different line. Jessica, can I turn to you? Because you've been listening, obviously, to what Ilana's been saying, what Graham's been saying, what Chloe's been saying from the artistic perspective. Talk to us a bit about your experience as a student who's now back in North Carolina, having done an exchange period over here. What are your own thoughts on this? I mean, is it something, because I'm getting a lot of emails from students who are likely to be coming back to Lincoln, but they're not sure whether they kind of want to come back to a kind of on-campus thing and so on. So what are your own thoughts and concerns about the current climate?
I think I can see both sides, where people want to go back and have things as normal, but also that, you know, it's not maybe the most logical step to do, because I actually, in a week, I have to go back to school. And
no!
I know, no! And it's very strange with getting these emails where they're saying, you know, we have to wear masks in every class and you have to be at every desk apart and we're going to be doing group work, but you can't actually do group work and I'm going to have all my classes online. But it's a little strange. It doesn't feel real. It's too bizarre, I think. It just kind of feels like it's just unspooling and I keep waiting for an explanation, but I don't think that schools know what's going on either, so I think everyone's a little uncertain.
And just share with us the name of your school, where you are at North Carolina, because obviously you're not at the University of Lincoln, sadly, because you've done that. So just talk to us about your college.
Yeah, I go to Appalachian State University. So it's a big school in the mountains. We're kind of in a valley in the Appalachian Mountain Range. So very beautiful, but very different from Lincoln. I miss it.
Well, we don't have the mountains in Lincoln. We're more flat as opposed to that. We have one hill, and that's basically it. That's perfectly okay. Graham, questions for yourself. Would you like to put them to Ilana, Chloe, or Jess?
Do you mind, ladies, if I go to Ilana?
No.
Go
I've got so many questions, we haven't got time. But I'm going to just talk about... I'd love to know about the Ken Russell Project, and I'd love to confirm something that I share with you, and that is all my life as a director, I started in the 80s directing, and I've always been in television. My whole life was to be in films, but I ended up in television, and I'm not ashamed of that. I think it's been a fantastic career. From the moment I started in drama, we had rehearsal periods. We had rehearsal blocks where we used to go and rehearse all the projects, dance routine. I mean, whatever you were working on, we had a rehearsal period, 2 weeks or a week before going to a studio. Gradually, over the years, the accountants came in and said, you don't need any rehearsals. Your actors can, they play a part and you come in and tell them where to go and you do your homework and you don't need rehearsals. So guess what? Every time you do a scene, you have literally 5 or 10 minutes, unless you're really tough and say, no, I'm going to spend as much as I can. You can't. You're never going to get employed. So you have 10, 15 minutes to scrabble a scene together with the planning you've done and where the actors come in with a performance they've kind of thought might be good. They don't know if it's any good. Maybe it's the right thing. What am I going to say? What's Lana going to say? And then somehow we cobble those scenes together. And they're terrific, and it works. And that, and gradually, it is through your experience in life, and the life of your career, that you manage somehow with experience to put it all together and get it going. And I would love, I keep asking at the beginning of big projects, can I have only two days, maybe 3 days with the actors, just to talk character, maybe play a few scenes just to see what we're going to get out of it. But we don't. No, that's not what we do. Blah, blah, blah. I'll stop.
Yeah.
Over to you.
All right. So on Perception, my co-writer and co-producer, Brian Smith, his background is from the Broadway world. He produced Kinky Boots Broadway. And we said, and we agreed, we are, no matter what, budgeting in rehearsal time. And we did. And what our actors, and we managed to get 4 days. And it was definitely at the expense of other things. But for me, it was so critical. And the actors were so grateful and so surprised because they were like, this never happens. So I was able to have these incredible in-depth character meetings with my male lead, especially Wes, who does tons of TV. He's a star on General Hospital show here. And we went to backstory. We would just, you know, just really form the character. And it was so fantastic that, and all of them, that they got a little carried away. Actually, once on set, Wes, you know, it was a very, very tough scene. And he turned to me and, you know, it was a scene we had really, you know, workshopped like crazy with the other actors and one-on-one, and we'd call each other before going set. And he looked at me, goes, no, I need more time. I need a few hours. And we had a hard out at like, yeah, 1 p.m. And so I'm like, okay, I had to really think, because like we did not have those 4 hours for him to wrap his head around like this character nuance that he had gotten a little spoiled because he thought, you know, it was still rehearsal. And, you know, on the fly, I was just like, okay, we got to just examine this angle. And I took him to the side and we worked through it and got the shot, got the heart out. We were okay. But I can't. I would like to be at the position where you are, where it could just be like, okay, I've got this catalog of tools and tricks. I can just like say, okay, we don't need rehearsal, but I love rehearsal. I love working with actors. I love the dynamic. I mean, it's one of my favorite things about it.
We've just been joined actually by Gwyneth Griffiths, our cosplaying specialist. Hi, Gwyneth. Good to see you fashionably late, which is marvellous. I don't quite know what you're doing on the stairs there, but let's just carry on regardless. It's all good.
Am I late? I thought it was 7:30.
It's time. It's just an illusion, Gwyneth. Don't worry. We'll be fine. We'll sort of tease ahead to this. If I may, Graham, I just want to sort of just briefly bring Gwyneth into this, because Gwyneth is a major cosplayer, and I think it's fair to say you are also a major fan of Battlestar Galactica. And with Alana obviously having directed We Are All Cylons, you might have one or two questions you want to put to her. Over to you.
Oh, pressure. I'm assuming we're in the newer series, because I've not actually watched the old series of Battlestar.
Yes, the newer series.
Yeah. They're like, I've not actually watched the original one, just the new one. But I've not actually seen what you've directed yet, so I'm going to have to take a look at it.
Okay.
And I think it's fair to say, Alana, also, you had some cosplay experience as well, because you embedded yourself deeply into We Are All Cylons, if memory serves.
Well, yes, that's right. But I mean, I was like a super low profile cosplayer. I mean, I just wore the cargo pants, black shirt, and some dog tags just to blend in, because I had my equipment. I wasn't like full on, you know, Centaurian or anything. But yeah, the conventions, I mean, were fantastic. And I can't wait. I haven't gone to any since then, but for my love of that community and the people I met, I hope in a couple of years it can all get back to that again, because it's such a wonderful space for people to express themselves.
And Graham, back to yourself, really, in terms of the way in which science fiction in particular can act as an outlet. Your experience of conventions, many and varied, presumably. I mean, have you been impressed by the cosplayers? Because I'm always very, very impressed by people like Gwyneth who go the whole hog, basically, and you know, obviously they do extremely well.
I love it. I think it's a really good part of all the conventions I've ever been to, and also awarding awards to people who are the best. It's a lot of fun, and people take it really seriously. It's really good. I think it's a terrific idea.
Jessica, you're one of the regular stars of Resonance Rewind, the weekly program we actually produce, which is kind of introducing you gradually into geekdom, etc.
Yes.
Have you cosplay material from your own point of view?
I've never done it before. I have friends who've gone to Comic-Con and have cosplayed, but I've actually, ever since we watched The Killing Joke, I'm now seriously considering dressing as Batgirl for Halloween. So we'll see if I can pull that off.
Well, I like to feel that even though you've actually left the University of Lincoln on your exchange thing, we can still actually gradually sort of keep permeating that sort of cosmic sort of influence across. Chloe, any thoughts on yourself in terms of cosplay? Who would be your favourite superheroine to dress up as?
Oh, gosh. Could this be like Marvel and DC?
I think so.
Or is it? Yeah. probably Harley Quinn.
It's a good one, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, I'm very intrigued by it all. I've never done, you know, dress up much really, but I'm definitely intrigued to do it. I bet it's a great laugh, I'm sure.
I mean, Ilana, if I can bring you sort of almost full circle here to where we came in terms of this wonderful zombie apocalypse academic conference that you've got online that's present, because the world needs more zombies these days. From your own perspective, talk to us about how you got involved with that and also your own thoughts in terms of the cosplay industry.
So I've had a loose affiliation with the with Arizona, with ASU. I was part of an Emerge conference there. I showed Cylons. I've done some work with the digital people. And a friend of mine is Athena Actopus, who started the Zombie Apocalypse Medicine Meeting in 2018. She's a very dear old friend. And once it was clear we were going to be in this quarantine situation, the academic conference is, you know, really not a possible thing. So she just started brainstorming with me about re-envisioning what an academic conference could look like in the age of a pandemic, because zombieism is really a metaphor. It's really, we do talk about the movies, and for sure that's, you know, the root of it, but it's really a way to, it's a lens through which to see culture and society, and to have this interdisciplinary group of artists and writers and academics talk about what it really means to be amidst this pandemic, amidst this apocalypse of a sort, which is really a rebirth, a reimagining. So we've come up with Channel Z, which is going to be several different programs of speakers and writers talking, like there's a wilderness meeting, a medicine meeting. So, you know, like, what do you do if your neighbor turns into a zombie and you barricade yourself in? What does a zombie bite look like? So obviously COVID-19 is very relevant, you know, the people who refuse to believe in science, who marching orders, don't believe in masks, you know, maybe they've been zombified. How do we protect ourselves from that?
I've had a look at Lana at the actual site. I'm very impressed with the whole thing, to the extent that I'm going to suggest that Jessica might like to actually start, I'll send her the links, et cetera, might like to attend this and be our kind of on-the-spot reporter, possibly together with Gwyneth as well, to actually give us some feedback in the next few days as the thing pans out. I mean, Jessica, does that appeal to yourself?
Yes, 100%, definitely. Oh,
great. That's great. So
I'll circulate the links from that point of view. And Gwyneth, how do you fancy actually seeing an American zombie conference? I was very impressed, Ilana, the way you said Channel Z as opposed to Channel Z. You know, it's wonderful. You know, you got most of the British audience.
I didn't come up with that. That's all Athena. She's the brainchild of this. And this is her second conference. So I'm just thrilled to be a part of it and help her out as much as I can. But directing these remote things is also very interesting, because it's like, okay, there's some people who need real help with lighting or wardrobe, and you know, it's
true.
Totally different challenge.
And Gwyneth, would you be up for attending this little zombie conference if I send you the details? Isn't
like, I love stuff like that. It sounds right up my street.
Well, there we are. You see, this is it. I mean, and I'm very impressed that you've actually taken the backdrop of Kermit the Frog. Halfway up the stairs is the stair where Gwyneth Paltrow sits. Folks, it's been an awesome rehearsal. I think we've done really well in the rehearsal. I think the final show is going to be wonderful. Oh, what do you mean, no rehearsal? Oh, well, never mind. time is beginning to wrap up, but I think, we're really only in part two here. And I know, Ilana, we were talking last week about bringing in Hawaii. So I think maybe next week we need to actually get the Hawaii connection going as well from that point of view. But Graham, would you like to start by asking the folk the usual last two questions, please? Over to you, please.
So everybody, have you, I don't know how you're going to answer one by one, but have you had a reasonable conversation with us all?
Yes, it was wonderful.
Jessica. Sorry, I was late.
And will you be coming back again?
Gwyneth, we're obviously working on the premise that she missed last week's completely because she'd forgotten about it. This time she's sort of, we'll get there. That's we will get there. I know that. And I'm not sure whether Chloe's there at all. Are you still with us, Chloe?
I'm still here.
Excellent. So has it been a reasonable telephonic link and will you be back with us again very soon?
That's what I was trying to say.
Excellent. We have moved from ways of working through critiques of our governments through to Cylons. I think we've actually managed to package quite a lot into the last 35 or so minutes. Graham Harper, Ilana Rain, Jessica Burtis, Chloe Rose and Gwyneth Griffiths, huge thanks. Keep on keeping on and we'll do it again soon, no doubt.
Yeah, very good to meet you all.